Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.
The internet's full of true crime podcasts. More and more are added to the list every day. Figuring out where to start or where to go next can be overwhelming. But have no fear, I'm here to help. I'm Bob Ruff, and this is the place to find your next true crime binge. Right, we're rolling here. I'm joined today by Molly and Jeffrey Wansel of the podcast Blood Ties. We've had a fabulous conversation so far during all the technical difficulties that we've had getting set up. I really wish we were recording all that because the interaction, Molly, between you and your dad is priceless. Why don't you two guys work together?
It's priceless to us as well.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having us, Bob.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
We're very honored to be asked.
Yes.
Oh, it is my pleasure. So I want to get to know you guys a little bit before we get into the podcast. And I'll start with you. I know you guys both live in London. And you guys are a father-daughter team.
Yeah.
Molly, tell me about yourself. What is your life? Where are you guys at right now? Whose house is that with all the books?
Right now we're in Jeffrey's house. In Bloomsbury in central London, and I live in East London in a place called Dalston, which is sort of, a bit east of here. And for my day job, I'm a talent agent. I represent actors and casting directors, and I also represent my dad, which is sort of how we ended up doing a podcast together. Roughly, yeah.
That's really cool. So I heard you call him Jeffrey. Do you call your dad Jeffrey, or do you just call him Jeffrey when you're on the podcast?
I call him Jeffrey and Dad and
Other things.
I refer to him as Jeffrey in conversation. I wouldn't, and sometimes call him Jeffrey too. Ever since he doesn't really I have nieces and they're not allowed to call him Grandpa or whatever. That's an absolute no. He's not keen on that.
I'm very much not keen on Grandpa.
They call him Jeffrey too.
The grandchildren call you Jeffrey?
Yep.
That's all. It keeps you young.
Yep, I'm doing my best. Yes.
Right. We were just discussing while we were getting our audio stuff set up that doing the podcast and doing this work is the only thing that keeps Jeffrey out of the bars and clubs and out terrorizing the town.
Well, I think that might be a slight exaggeration, but not much of one.
So Molly, you're a talent agent. That's a cool job. And then you represent your dad and Jeffrey. So you're actually born in Scotland. So does that mean you're Scottish, or are you?
Yes. Yeah, I really am. Yeah, my mother and I were both born in Scotland. Well done. Wonderful.
So my family are Robertsons from Scotland.
Okay. So that Lowland Scots. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I'm a Lowland Scot too. I was born in Greenock on the edge of the Clyde on the way down the Firth. And so my family's name was Cunningham, they come from Ayrshire. So it's on the west coast of the Lowland bits of Scotland. I'm not a Highlander.
So what brought you down to London? Was it work, or how did you end up coming
down there? No. My parents came back to London when I was two. I haven't lived in Scotland since I was two. But although they went back for a time when I was about 15, but I didn't like that much, and I came back to London. So I've been in London most of my life. I went to school here, went to university here, worked here, and I'm still here. I like cities.
You like the city? So I was telling you before when we were off the air that I've only been to London once. I did a UK speaking tour, I think 2017, 2018, something like that, and we did Newcastle, Manchester, Edinburgh, and then our final show was in London, but we like rolled in at 7 p.m., 20 minutes before the show, and I did the show, and then we left. We were in the Notting Hill area.
Okay.
So that's all I saw. I met Idris Elba when I was there.
Oh, yeah. He hangs out in West London.
Yes.
He DJs there and stuff. Notting Hill is West, yeah.
He DJs?
Idris Elba DJs a lot.
Oh, wow. So my claim to fame is that I kind of punked out Idris Elba, not on purpose, but I'm the worst at pop culture ever. I don't know who anyone is. Most of my audience already heard the story, so I'll keep it real short. But after the show, we walked into some bar in Notting Hill, and as we're walking in, I don't do crowds. I don't like, and it was like a jam-packed bar, wall-to-wall people. Mm. So I'm like, my anxiety level's through the roof. I don't like people that close to me. And so we're walking in, and some listener said, "Hey, Bob, Idris Elba's here, and he's gonna take a picture with you." I didn't know who that was. I had no idea who that was. All I know is I walked into the bar. He introduced me. Idris Elba came walking up to me to shake my hand and to take a picture. And I knew I had a bunch of people in the back room that wanted to take pictures. So I quick shook his hand and I was like, "You know what? I'll catch you later, bud. I've got a bunch of people back there that want to take pictures." So, and he looked at me like, "Who the hell do you think you are?" As I wandered away. And then my wife later was very upset that probably I just walked thing. Away from Idris Elba.
I don't think there's anything to be ashamed of there, Bob.
Yeah, right. Don't worry about it. You haven't missed much, I don't
Well,
think.
Listen, we've all done that in various times.
Right. So you, Jeffrey, you have quite a work record. You've been a columnist, a reporter, editor for a newspaper, been radio, published books. You've made documentaries. Tell me about your career.
Oh, gosh, I don't think you've got enough
time
for that.
How long have you got?
I mean, I've been doing this 55 years. You know, it's a long, long time to be making up words and putting them on paper and sometimes putting them on film. I've done all kinds of things. But I started as a trainee on the Times in London. And then I've just gone from there. Yes, I've worked for lots of newspapers and I still review books for the Daily Mail, review crime and thrillers. But now mostly I make true crime documentaries, lots and lots and lots of true crime documentaries.
So you've made it. So I know that you did was a CBS reality original called Murder by the Sea. That one was you, right?
Yep, that was me. I've also done an absolute shed load of Britain's Most Evil Killers, World's Most Evil Killers. I think I'm now on 130. And I've got
and
another
the number
10.
You just gave for that. Was the number you just gave for that a shitload? Is that how many?
No, a shedload. I am conscious that we are recording this.
A shedload.
Yes.
See, here in the States, we call that a shitload and or a plethora.
No, I wouldn't meaning. Be doing that. No, I'm not. Plethora is probably beyond me.
Are any of those, all those documentaries you've done, are any of those available to like US audiences or are
yes,
they all like
all,
UK TV?
All the World's Most Evil, Britain's Most Evil Killers are very much in the United States. Don't think Murder by the Sea is, but my goodness me, the number of responses I get and from people in the States writing to me saying that was a fascinating program, you know, or that was a great show. So I know it's out there, and it's in fact been. Oh, it's all over the world. It's in Europe, and it's. I think some of it's now in Asia. So yeah, I've done a lot of that, a lot, and which I've enjoyed. I mean, I got to the end of my career. I thought, well, that's the end of everything. But now I've seemed to be busier than ever.
When was the end of your career?
I'm not sure. Probably about 20 years ago.
It sounds to me like you must have a really good agent to keep busy like that.
Yeah, I've got a really good agent, I think.
Definitely didn't get to the end of your career. You'd never stop working.
I like working. I love what I do. I've always been very lucky. I really loved it. And I love the podcast. I mean, genuinely, I said to Mo on a podcast not that long ago, of all the things I've done, it's almost the thing that I'm proudest of. You know, because crikey, it's from a standing start 4.5 years ago. It was Molly's idea. And she said, "Daddy, we should do a podcast." And we did a podcast and here we are. It's amazing. Quite amazing.
That's all. So yeah, the podcast starts in 2017. So Molly, it's your idea. Where'd you come up with the idea and the format and all that?
So Jeffrey and I have lunch every Saturday together, and we've been having lunch together. I mean, at that point, 15 years, you know, now 20 years, we have lunch every Saturday. And because he works in true crime, and because he has written a lot of biographies about serial killers, and like he sort of veered into true crime a long time ago, and I have like a natural interest for it, we always ended up talking about crime in some way, maybe just what was happening in the news, or like had we talked about sort of the story. And then I got into podcasts, and I started listening to true crime podcasts because I like them. And I was listening to My Favorite Murder, which obviously I'm sure you and all your listeners know. But the setup is not dissimilar, right? The two people talking about murder. And I was like, oh, I think this would be really good for Dad, because I would love it if everyone could hear Dad, because he's so good at telling stories and he's so knowledgeable. And this is a really good format for me to, the plan was for me to just sort of publicize him and then sort of leave it. But I sort of got myself tied into it somehow. So I was like, why don't we do this together? Sort of constructed over the idea that we meet every week and have a chat, and often we talk about murder, and so we're just sort of bringing people into our conversation. So yeah. Jeffrey tells the stories, and I ask the questions that hopefully you would want to ask as a listener if you were with us, and you were also listening to him tell the story.
And the great benefit, Bob, is that it's a big generational benefit. In other words, I have a lot of Molly brings me a lot of insights from her generation. And so there's an enormous benefit to me to have that extra female input and also generational difference input. That's what makes it, I think, very special, because not many fathers and daughters actually do true crime together.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. And that's a great point that you span generations, gender, yeah. Like you're kind of the, and I've listened, and it's a great listen. I love the format, but you're kind of like the voice of the listeners, Molly, that you're kind of asking the questions, because I mean, you represent 78% of the true crime podcast audiences.
Ladies.
which are women. Yeah. Well, yeah. Like 78% of the audience of true crime podcasts are women.
Yeah.
And so you do good. We just recently on Truth and Justice added a woman to our Friday follow-up episodes, and it just kind of happened by accident, but it's like the response has been phenomenal, because we always had in our follow-up episodes, three men, you know, breaking down what we think about everything. And as you know, Jeffrey, what do we know?
No, I would agree. And I think it's a terrific idea. You know, Molly brings an insight that I don't have, and she brings an experience that I don't have. And that means that we are able to span more generations, and also to have many of the crimes we talk about are committed against women. Not all, of course. Mm-hmm. But many. And I think it's very important, especially in these times, that the voice of the victims and the voice of women is heard loud and clear. So that adds dimension to me.
It certainly does. And so Molly, you've got this bright idea about a podcast. You talked Jeffrey into doing the podcast.
Yeah, and then I had to work out how to do it.
Yes.
Right, yeah. So how'd you tackle that?
So I outsourced, obviously, because that's what all smart people do. I went up to some of the really bright young people that I work with, and I said, I want to do a podcast. Who do you know who can help me? And one of the younger people at my work had a friend who she was at university with, who worked at Radio 4 and also had a podcast. And so we just got them to come on and help us produce it. So we have a producer now. It's actually the woman I asked for help in the first place who does it. And I have a friend, you know, it's one of those things. I have a friend who has a brother who helped us sort of sort out the sound just about, because it was a bit dodgy at first. We just begged and borrowed for help, basically. And yeah, we somebody else. I record the stuff here with Dad in this setup, as you can see, literally in his living room. And then I send the audio file off, and our producer puts it into the world. So I don't know how that works, because I work because I work full time in quite a difficult job, and having an extra side hustle as a podcast is also a lot. So I can't do all of it, but I do my best.
She does a great job, Bob.
Yeah, I just recently learned, I feel for you, because I just recently learned literally this week how much I don't know, because I've had the same editor since we started the show, and he's moved on to other opportunities, and we just brought on a brand new editor, Kelly Behrens-Brink. She hosts the True Crime IRL podcast. And I'm like, yes, I'll meet with Mike and I'll pass everything off to Erica and it'll be a smooth transition. Then I realize I don't know how to do 80% of what Mike does. I can't show her how to do this stuff.
I can't do any percent of what I do. Okay.
Your job is to sit down and talk, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Well,
yeah.
I don't have to do any prep for the podcast, right? I come in blind. I mean, some of the stories, obviously, I already know. There's certain true crime stories that, but oftentimes we do ones that I don't know and I don't have to do any research. Jeffrey prepares the story. So his work is very much in the preparation and the telling of the stories, and mine, I don't have to do any prep in advance of coming in here. And
oh, that's
recording.
Interesting. So your reactions and questions on the podcast, Molly, are live, organic. That's the first time you've heard the material.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
I thought you were
always
a really good actress.
We've always believed that the spontaneity is another thing that we get a lot of reactions, Bob. You know, people say it's so nice to hear you talking to each other as though it's at, which it would be, you know, across the living room or around the dining table or wherever it may be. It's mm-hmm. supposed to be spontaneous. I wouldn't want it any other way. I'm very keen that if you do any kind of storytelling, and that's basically what I see that I'm doing, you don't want it to be as if it's been written down for you. You want it to come from the heart. You want it to come clean, clear, and also told with passion and commitment.
And genuine and organic. And I think you guys capture that very well.
Yeah, I guess as well, because when we're sat here talking to each other, Jeffrey is looking at me and talking to me. So, of course, we know that we're talking to lots of people, but we're genuinely having a conversation and he's telling me a story and I'm engaging with him in the way that we would if no one, as you say, was listening.
Yes, and it's just the old secret of any great radio is that you're talking to one person. You're not talking to a room full of people. You're talking to one person. And that's what we think this that helps this podcast.
It does. It comes across amazing. And I love your guys' relationship. It makes me want to do a podcast with my dad.
Lots of people say that, actually. And that I think one of the things people really like is hearing our interaction. And, you know, yeah, they get a real sense of kind of warmth and, yeah, familiarity from that. And it's kind of comforting, I guess, to hear, because we're very close. And yeah, I think it's.
But also, it's often the material, Bob, is so dark sometimes that it's important that you bring the fact that there is life going on and our relationship is important to that. And so it dilutes the terrible darkness, because inevitably we're telling sometimes some really awful stories, which of course are true. But you want the sense that the listener believes, oh, yes, that's awful, but there's still real life. There's still joy. There's still hope. There's still relationships. I think that's the other ingredient that I'm very proud of.
Yeah.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Molly, as you described, the warmth and passion, compassion that you guys have, that's when I realized, that's why my dad and I won't do a podcast. so we are very similar. So like I think Molly and I, you are probably pretty close to age and the same age. And I think Jeffrey, you and my dad are about the same age. I play cards with my dad and all his friends every Thursday night. And then every Friday morning, I do breakfast with my dad every Friday morning. And one of his friends. But, you know, we're not talking about true crime. Usually it's a thorough discussion and analysis of the card game that happened the night before.
Yeah.
Well,
that's all right.
Yeah. Also, I mean, interestingly, obviously, the podcast was my idea because I wanted more people to hear how great Jeffrey is around true crime. But he and I have lots and lots and lots of other things in common. So that's We could probably do a podcast about quite a lot of things if we put our minds to it, to be honest. But this just happens.
We do.
To
you know, it's funny because my dad and I too, we have a very good rapport. But we're a little more roughnecky than you. Let me give you a little example of how the rough household their families work. This past weekend was Easter, and we had our big Easter dinner. There's 15 of us around the table, and it's mostly everybody kind of picking on everyone else. But my dad is known for the one-liner, and throughout the dinner, his sister, my aunt, is telling a story to my niece, who now works in a nursing home. She says, "Oh, I used to work in a nursing home," and then she starts telling the story about this wonderful man that used to come talk to the nurses every day, and one day he came out and he talked to the nurses, and he was all friendly, and he went back to his room, and we went back in there, followed him in there 2 minutes later, and there he was dead. Oh. And my aunt's very good at the awkward story, so we're all waiting for the good part, the punchline, the whatever. Nope, that's the whole story. So I immediately said, "What the hell was that? That's the worst Easter story I've ever heard." And my dad, without missing a beat, says, "Well, she didn't tell you what happened 3 days later."
That's classic. It's a good line.
That's really funny.
Very good line.
So that's the kind of compassion you get out of my dad and
yeah,
I
to do funny.
A podcast
that's
together.
That's a good one.
So did you have any trouble convincing dad to do the podcast?
No. No. Anything that's work, he's up for.
I'll turn up, yeah. I promise you.
I mean, we can
I do anything. I've always been very keen to keep busy and do things. It's what a joy to talk to our podcast audience is a positive joy. You know, they're delightful. They write us extraordinary messages. They're very appreciative. What could be nicer? I mean, what a privilege. I treasure it. I truly treasure it.
That's so amazing that you have such a passion for it. Now, do you guys ever get have you guys managed to get through podcasting without stirring up like trolls and mean people sending nasty messages, or have you just learned to deal with those?
We just don't listen. We don't really engage with it. Do you know what? Generally, our listeners are so nice. I think maybe we've had like one or two. People will send some, say a few things on the reviews and stuff, but we just don't read them.
No.
Yeah, but overall, right. Our listeners are absolutely, they're heaven. They're so nice.
Yeah.
They're really lovely. They're all so positive and kind.
Is that Betsy there on your lap?
Yes, this is Betsy.
Yeah.
That's our creepy Erica fact for the week, that I know that your dog's name is Betsy when you just picked her up on the floor to bed.
She's very much part of the podcast. She's in our artwork and all the listeners know her, and she's she barks occasionally when she's got something to say.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's because she's always with me, so she's always she's always at the podcast.
We've never done a dog napping story. Perhaps we should.
Maybe we should do a I could do one with any dog harm in it. Or animal harm I don't like generally.
Yeah, you might upset Betsy too.
Yeah, probably would. Absolutely. Yeah.
She's so adorable and so well-behaved. I'm a huge dog person. I've got three dogs. None of them could I bring into even into this building when I'm recording a podcast, because if a leaf blew by, then they have to all bark at it and let me know that there's a leaf outside. They're never quiet or still.
Oh, yeah, she's very well-behaved. The only thing, she sleeps all the way through the podcast, and then about halfway through, she gets up and wanders over to Dad's chair. And she sort of is like, "Can you give me a stroke?" And then the producer tells us off because Dad goes off mic because he's not allowed
he's
to
petting
give
the
her
dog.
A, yeah, it's not allowed to anymore.
No, I'm not allowed to do that. No, got to stay on the mic.
Now this is even more of a family affair because isn't Jeffrey, your son Dan, also does the music for the show, right?
Yep, absolutely. This is a complete family operation. I promise you. Dan composed the music and plays it, which we've used from the very beginning, and lots of friends have helped, and it's wonderful. I'm sorry, I am totally bewitched by it all. It is an immense privilege and an immense joy to do.
It is.
That's incredible. Who came up with the name Blood Ties?
I think that was actually devised one evening in a pub with some friends of mine. it was my friend Megan and her friends, and I was like, "Guys, we need a thing. We need a name. can't remember what the other ones were now.
Neither can I. It's too long ago, Mo.
Blood Ties. There was something to do with menus.
Yeah. Blood Ties always sounded to us right. You know, it just felt right the moment we said it. So.
Yeah.
And it still feels right today.
It fits, for sure.
Yeah, so yeah. It just worked out. And then my friend George, who I went to school with, did our artwork, that amazing like caricature of us. So it all just fit together in the end, didn't it?
But it was Mo. Mo's friends came up with the idea. It wasn't me. That title is not mine.
So your guys' release schedule, you don't continue all the time. You kind of do series and then take a break and then another series. Is that right? How many, you've done like 10 series so far?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, they're a bit random. I don't think there's much pattern to it particularly. I mean, we tend to take break. We tend to take breaks, you know, maybe at Christmas, in the summer for a bit, and around Easter time, you know, like we'll take breaks a bit, like school holidays kind of thing. But we double record, so we record two episodes every other week, so we can put one out every week.
And what days do your podcast release?
Mondays.
Yeah. We record on Saturdays before lunch.
Yeah, we record on Saturday and then we go to lunch.
Then we go to lunch. So we record and we go to lunch, which is where it grew out of, you know, having lunch together every Saturday.
Right, sure. It's great. I love the relationship and the way you guys work together. And it's just cool that you guys have this beyond what the podcast has done and the audience and all that. I hope that when my kids get a little older that I have something like that to keep that bond going.
I hope so too.
Yeah, no, it's really special. We're very lucky.
Yeah, we're very lucky. Really.
So we got a case we're going to talk about today that you guys picked out, and it is the case of Bible John. And I believe true to format, Jeffrey, I'm going to let you tell us about the Bible John case.
Well, Bob, if you come from the lowlands of Scotland, Bible John is probably the most famous unsolved serial killer case in Scotland. Bible John killed three women, 1968, 1969, and then disappeared in a puff of smoke. He killed them all as a result of going to a famous Glasgow ballroom called the Barrowlands, which we're talking about 1968. It was a very different era, just the beginning of rock and roll in Scotland. Young women would go, often to meet guys, of course, why not? But we're not talking about discos in that old-fashioned, in the modern sense. We're talking about really quite an old-fashioned. See, the girls would be wearing wide skirts and the guys would be wearing, that have dressed up specially in sharp suits, and they'd all, you know, be well turned out. But this particular killer, always known as Bible John, and I'll explain why in just a moment, targeted women in the Barrowlands ballroom and then attacked them and then stopped quite out of the blue. And nobody knew why. Now, it's one of the few occasions in Scotland, or indeed in the UK, in which there's a very, very good artist's impression of what Bible John looked like. He was quite tall. He was 6 foot, just maybe a bit over. He was between 25 and 35. A number of the people who'd been with the victims, sister on one occasion, friend on another, remembered him. And yet no one ever caught him. And the reason it was called Bible John was that he had this habit, talking to the victims and their friends, of saying that dance halls were dens of iniquity and condoned adultery.
Well, they thought that the man it could have been was someone who gave this prosaic.
It's possible. But
he was quoting the Bible.
Yeah.
He quoted the Bible a lot, particularly the Old Testament. And he was a teetotaler. He admitted that on a number of occasions. No one ever saw him drink. He took the women away, sometimes with a friend, and then they drop the friend off in a taxi and they go back to the home. All the bodies were found very near to the victims' homes, mostly they'd been brutally attacked with blunt instruments. Some of them had been sexually assaulted, at least two, maybe all three. It's never entirely clear about the third victim. And by a strange and bizarre element to this is each of the three victims were menstruating when they were killed. It's one of the most extraordinary elements of this story.
It's just such a strange case.
Yeah.
And if you speak to people from, one of my clients is from Glasgow and he was alive at the time and he was like, you know, oh, my mum thought she was in the Barrowlands with Bible. Like everybody has a thing about him.
It's one of the most extraordinary. He killed, all the women he killed had children. But they all separated from their husbands.
They all look similar.
They look very much the same. Exactly. They usually brunette, not very tall. Now, why did he choose those specific victims? Why did he then lecture them about a dance hall is a den of iniquity? It's condoning adultery. Why did he then choose to, certainly to bludgeon them to death, and on at least two and probably three, rape them as well, and then dump them, two of them pretty naked, one with more clothes on, in this extraordinary manner, and then disappears. It's a absolutely chilling and in many ways extraordinary story. And there's been all sorts of attempts. I mean, we've had criminologists saying, oh, well, it was definitely... There's quite a famous Glasgow-based killer called Peter Tobin. He's been discounted by the police on a number of occasions. We've never found any DNA evidence. We have no idea. There's speculation that it was a killer, an Edinburgh-based killer called Angus Sinclair. He was always known as the World's End Killer because he picked up two girls outside a pub in Edinburgh, in the old town in Edinburgh, and which was called the World's End, and took them away and killed them.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, it remains a vivid, extraordinary, compelling mystery. He killed the last time in 1969, and we're no nearer knowing now who it was than we were then.
I was just going to say that it's so strange that he just stopped. You almost think he died or is in prison or something, because typically... Someone, especially with a specific signature that seems like it's probably a surrogate for someone. There's someone that he's killing in his mind when he's attacking these young brunette single moms that are separated from their spouses. You know, it's got all the markers of a serial killer that typically continue to escalate. And then he just, after the third one, we never see it happen again. It's weird.
It is weird. And as you know, the classic serial killer signature is they'll go on until they're stopped. But he stopped.
Right.
Out of the blue. And when he stopped, he would have been, well, it's presumed the estimates of his age are correct. He would be, let's say he was 30. Oh, he'd be in his 80s now. Did he die? I've never thought he did. Quite a lot of people, particularly some of the police detectives, wondered if he wasn't a policeman, whether Bible John wasn't actually a detective. That's, I've always found that a fascinating theory.
Yeah, it's an interesting theory. It still doesn't explain why he stops. Usually people with that, you know, that have those kind of urges to do that can't control them. But, you know, you track serial killers all over the world in the years, and you see this, you know, escalation period, a cool off period in between attacks that get shorter and shorter and shorter as the you know, as their inner demons seem to ramp up more and more and more. You don't usually see this, you know, ramp up and then cool off and then
but you know
I've satisfied my urge forever now.
No, but you know as well as I do, Bob, there are certain, particularly as a killer in Los Angeles who stopped for 14 years. He was a refuse collector, you know, dustbin man. And he stopped for 14 years and went back to it. But there's never been any sign of Bible John back again. Never. Now, did he go somewhere else and change his name and do something, commit different crimes in a different way? Possibly. But Mo chose the story because it It is a genuine and, in my view, fascinating mystery. A lot of people have had a go at trying to solve it, but not in the 50 years have any of them managed to do it.
And they have some DNA from the scene, right? Because didn't they clear a guy named John White from the bar? They cleared him through DNA testing?
Yeah, there have been a couple of, but really, it was so long before we had anything like DNA that whatever evidence there was, well, it's so degraded now that it's very difficult. I mean, if you talk about a case in the 80s where DNA was just coming through and, you know, you got cleverer and cleverer dealing with that, but this is 1968, 69. There was the concept of trace or DNA or forensic evidence was really not very large. But the detectives, all credit to what was then Strathclyde Police, now Police Scotland, was that they did throw a lot of effort at it. Interviews, right. You know, they put plainclothes officers into Barrowland to see if they could spot. And one of the great ironies, the last killing, they'd taken the undercover officers out barely 2 weeks before the last victim. Now, I've always thought that that indicated perhaps it was a policeman, but what do I know?
It could be, and they certainly did. There was no lack of effort here. I mean, they interviewed 50,000 witnesses and interviewed over 5,000 suspects. I've never seen a case where 5,000 suspects were interviewed.
No, nor would you in a case in which the last victim took a taxi with Bible John across Glasgow, so she was dropped off before he then proceeded to kill the other woman in the cab. But of course, there's no CCTV in Barrowland in 1969. There's none of the things that we would depend on now. Any case would depend on now. CCTV evidence would be incredibly important. We'd be tracing mobile phone masts. We'd be saying, oh, yeah, well, of course, it's none of that. We don't have any of that when it comes to this case. That's what makes it fascinating.
Yeah, it is a fascinating case, and everything I've heard from you guys so far is just your storytelling is incredible. I love Molly's interjections and how she's really asking the questions that we're all thinking about. For you listeners, you want to hear more about this case, you can check it out along with you have 10 series that are out since 2017. Their names are Molly and Jeffrey Wansel, and the podcast is called Blood Ties. Check it out. It'll be your next big true crime binge. Molly and Jeffrey, it has been a genuine pleasure to meet both of you, and I love the show. Thank you for coming on, and I love what you guys are doing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Crime Binge is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Audioboom. Produced and edited by Mike Bussing. Music and artwork by Shane Yoder of PutThemInASong.com. Our website, TrueCrimeBinge.com, was created by Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com. If you're a listener and would like to recommend a future guest or a podcaster that would like to request an interview, you can do so right on our website. And again, that web address is TrueCrimeBinge.com. If you're enjoying the show, please do me a huge favor and take a minute to rate and review us on iTunes or whatever platform you're using to listen. And make sure you give us a follow on social media. We can be found everywhere at True Crime Binge. Thank you so much for listening, and make sure you tune in next Wednesday morning for another podcaster, another case, and another True Crime Binge.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.